We kick off hour number three of the program. It's Three and Outs, brought to you today by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. You can become a member. They've been doing it for 85 years. They'll take great care of you. Go to tvacreditunion.com for more information. I don't know when the switch happened exactly, but have you noticed that Lamonte Turner is your point guard now in big scoring situations?
Yes.
My guess on that is that as Jordan Bone became more and more of a scorer, they think it's actually better for Bone to get the ball after it's been handled a little bit on the in the half court. That way he's in a better position to score. And on that final possession, I mean, it'd been really weird if Jordan Bone was just dribbling it out front and then took a couple dribbles towards the three-point line and jacked a three from there. You think getting the pass from Lamonte to the – like, I wouldn't have been surprised at all if Bone just hits that shot and Tennessee wins. I mean, it was a good look, like you mentioned. I don't know if I love it. I don't know. It's weird because I've always thought just running ball screens with Admiral setting the ball screen for Bone – seems like a very, very basic play that gives you so many options because Admiral can roll to the basket. He can slip it. He can pop, pick and pop for three. You can't really – the guy who's guarding Admiral can't hedge on the Bone. If they switch, then a lot of the guys that are guarding Admiral cannot stay in front of Jordan Bone. But Bone's also not super aggressive like some of these other guards for certain teams where the ball goes through them all the time. So I don't know. It's weird. What's really strange is that Rick Barnes is a guy that has run all of that stuff before for a guy like that. Like Barnes at Texas implemented all of that ball screen stuff so you could just keep the ball in the hands of your best player the whole time. But with this team, it's not really like that because Grant's your best player, and obviously he's not going to be handling the ball out on the perimeter to come off ball screens. So I don't know. What do you like Lamonte handling the ball some in key situations so that Bone can be off and ready to score?
I don't mind it. Really, those two seem so interchangeable there. If it's Bone to Turner for the three or vice versa, it doesn't really mean much to me. I mean, the fact that you've got two guys out there who can handle the ball, who can help out each other if you have to pick up the ball and get semi-trapped or get in trouble, I'm good with that. I mean, there have been some time. I mean, the LSU game kind of sticks out where Turner took a really bad shot.
Oh, bringing the ball up, actually up the floor, yeah.
I don't know if we had a play called for man and not for zone, and that's why we just waited and said, okay, well, we're just going to try to do something quick and get a shot up. I'm not sure. But, again, I didn't have a problem with it. I guess, for me, the only problem I had was we didn't run anything to get it inside. But you did get a good look, and if the ball bounces just a little bit shorter, it's going to be Grant or Kyle grabbing it and putting it back up for a chance to win the game. But I didn't have a problem with that at all. I am supremely interested on whether or not the Admiral wanted to sit narrative is true. It seems like it because Turner said it, Barnes said it, Admiral said it. They all had the same message. Admiral on the bench during overtime did not seem dejected or disappointed. He was as energetic as he had been all game, and Tennessee played very, very well in overtime. That did not look like a senior leader who got told to sit down and be quiet, and he was over there pouting. He was the biggest cheerleader on the team as Tennessee pulled away from Iowa in overtime. It's odd. It's a little different, but I also don't think that's outside of what we have come to expect from this team if he really felt that way in that moment. And, you know, if he goes out there and Kyle has a bad start to overtime, like you said, you throw him back in the game, you're not saving him for anything. But I do think that there's a point to the fact that, hey, they're going to come right at me. I can't defend the way I want to defend, so I'm probably going to foul. Let's leave Kyle in there. He's taller, and if he fouls, there's no real difference.
Rob Lewis of VolQuest said that the final play was supposed to be a play for Grant to set a high screen and then ultimately end up with the basketball for the final shot. But when Iowa came out in the zone, you know, that kind of changed things. And that Barnes said he still thought that they could have gotten the ball to Grant Williams.
Okay.
But I don't, like, why aren't you – why didn't that happen then? Like what? I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it again and see if Barnes is yelling at Lamonte to do something and he just didn't know what he meant, or like, how does that not?
Did we have another timeout right there? Or had we just burned the last one?
I don't remember. I want to say they had one left and had two when they started overtime.
Do you take it right there when you see zone?
You can.
I mean, a lot of teams do that, right? I mean, it's the old football, hey, they showed this on the two-point. We're going to call a timeout because we showed this. Now we're going to So then you say, okay, now we're going to have two plays called. If they go zone, we're going this. If it's man, this.
Yep.
We just got to get into it a little bit faster now because we, you know, burned 2 or 3 seconds once we realized they were in
I mean, you can
zone.
At least call a play for the zone that you run all the time.
Right, yeah. I don't know. I didn't break down how often Iowa was in zone versus man, but you would think at that point maybe, yeah, call two plays.
Yeah, I mean, even in high school, we had a base – you have a base play for an odd front zone and a base play for an even front zone and then a base motion for man-to-man. Like, you could at least – it was a 1-2-2. You could at least just call your base kind of even-fronted offense to face their odd-fronted zone. And that probably brings Bone and Lamonte up high and Grant somewhere in the middle, and you just try and work the ball to him. The problem – the beauty of going zone defense late in the game is it really messes up that whole take the last shot thing. Because to get the best shot against a zone defense, you really need to make the zone move some for 10 to 12 seconds before you pull the trigger.
Right.
But sometimes you end up with a wide open look before that, and you're almost just forced to take it. But that might leave a miss with like 6 or 7 seconds left, and that's obviously
right.
not what you want.
And so, yeah, maybe that's what Barnes was thinking. He's like, if we attack the zone, we might get a good look too early. Let's just walk it out and then try to hit a quick shot when the game or go to overtime.
I mean, really, yeah, it's tough.
I didn't feel terrible about going to overtime, but I could also see why maybe at that point a lot of people were thinking, don't go to overtime. Don't extend this.
Yeah.
Like, Iowa's on the run. Like, let's just win it right here.
Let's go to the phone lines and grab Willie. Willie, you're on 3 and Out. What's up, bud?
Hey, guys. I'll tell you what. Y'all touched on pretty much all the points that I wanted to touch on except for one. And I was glad it went to overtime because we were playing so bad at the time. I just thought we needed to settle down a little bit. But I'll tell you what. You guys hit on a good point. They went to a zone defense, and we were not prepared for it. So that's when you call the timeout, when you say, hey, they're in a zone defense. We don't have a play call for that. We need to call a timeout and regroup.
Well, that's what did they have one? So they did have one left, right, Willie, when they went to OT?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I probably would have.
Bars usually has 5 or 6 in his pocket because he won't call a timeout, but. Yeah, he had one.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure.
But you know where I thought he really messed up? And I've heard some of these sheep calling these shows. When John Fulkerson went over and set that pick, and he got fouled 3 times by that little puck, and he did nothing, and they called a double foul, Barnes should have got a damn technical.
I think he tried. I think he tried, Willie.
No, he didn't. He went out there and assaulted his own player.
He's making an example. He was just reliving the moment.
No, he was not. He was not demonstrating what happened to Fulkerson. He was assaulting Fulkerson. He treated Fulkerson like crap all year long.
Willie, no, he was showing the ref exactly what the guy did.
No, he wasn't. Hey, if you really believe that, you're delusional. Here's what he did.
Well, I guess I'm delusional because he looked at the ref and said he shoved him as he shoved him.
I didn't see him say anything to the ref.
Well, I can read lips, Willie.
Hey, but here's what I'm saying. Fulkerson is giving his heart out for this team all year long, and he plays him 9 minutes. Give me a break. That guy is helping that team, and Barnes won't play him. I mean, I don't understand that. Do you?
Who do you want to steal minutes from, Willie?
Alexander, when he's in there acting like a girl.
Well, there's been more of that down the stretch. I mean, I think it's been a constant kind of a pulling teeth to try and get Alexander to play tougher and play stronger. And we saw a little bit more of that. I wish Fulkerson would just play more with the with four other starters. Like Fulkerson and Ponson together, I don't understand the point there. Like play Fulkerson some with four of the other guys the other top six, and then play Pons in with four of the other top six. That makes more sense to me.
But I tell you what, Mark Turgeon, and they commented on this on the big show. He made two adjustments. He got a technical foul. They were down 15 points. He got a technical foul, and at the same time, he went to his own defense. And from that point on, they kicked LSU's butt. They just came up a little bit short. I mean, I just don't see that Rick Barnes makes any in-game adjustments to help our team.
Thanks for the call, Willie. I actually agree with that. I agree with that. I think he has done a like I said earlier, a phenomenal job of developing these players, of allowing them to play to their ability with the leadership and this team is they're super smart basketball players. They play really well together. At some point you have to help your players a little bit, and it still feels like there's moments when Rick Barnes could do that, and he comes up a little short in that area. Now, it doesn't mean he's a bad coach. Doesn't mean that like I said earlier, it doesn't mean you need to go all the way to one end or the other with the extremes, but those are places where Rick Barnes could have coached better yesterday. And every coach has those moments. And if you don't believe me, listen to Jeremy Pruitt in a press conference. Basically, every game they play, Jeremy Pruitt points out where he could have been a better coach. If you aren't critiquing yourself, like you're not doing it right. So all you sunshine pumpers out there that want to worship the coach and say we can't criticize the coach at all because he's the coach of Tennessee, by God. Well, you're the reason Butch Jones got an extra year and that the football program's in the dumps right now. Like, you can criticize a great coach. You can criticize John Wooden if he makes a bad decision. It's fine. Pat Summitt, fine. Doesn't matter. They criticize themselves. I don't understand this whole line of thinking. Because Willie's right. There's people out there right now saying, you can't criticize Rick Barnes. He has this in the Sweet 16. It's like, wait a minute. That makes no sense. You get all that credit, and we can still talk about where the team could have played better on Sunday. They almost pulled off the biggest choke job in NCAA tournament history. There has to be something negative happening when that happens. There were people literally saying you can't criticize Butch Jones. You can't criticize the basketball team yesterday because they won the game. Like, that's not that. What if Iowa was just a little better and you'd have lost, but Tennessee had played the exact same game? Those same people would be like, fire Rick Barnes. You can't. I don't understand that.
I'm not sure if you mean. I don't see anybody saying, like, Rick Barnes coached a perfect game yesterday. I've seen a lot of people saying, whew, we gotta fix some stuff.
There are people trying to have smart discussions on some message boards about some of these issues, and some people continually just
don't worry about the message board,
beat people's heads in. With, you can't criticize the coach, they won the game.
Real quick, by the way, reading lips. Rick Barnes, the official, comes over, and he says, you can't do that crap, as he shoves Fulkerson away. That's not assault.
I watched
you
the
can't
video.
Do, he's saying, you can't do this right here, and then he just demonstrates what the guy did.
Yeah, I watched the video, and I didn't try and read his lips, but I
he
could
says,
tell.
You can't do that crap.
Rick Barnes is saying, you can't do this, and he shoves Fulkerson.
He says that crap.
Okay.
Of this, I am certain.
Let's go back to the phone lines. We got Philly next.
I can read lips.
Yep. Philly, from Willie to Philly. What's up, Phil?
What's
Where's
going on, Don?
Philly?
It's nice. It's kind of entertaining that the Willie got everybody started up this morning.
Did you think it was assault, brother?
We don't ever get calls anyway. What's the use? I mean,
I was worried they were going to tee Rick Barnes up for shoving the way they gave the double foul out there for.
That done time to go on really wild and got one though. But after that, they got a call. I mean, they really did. I mean, how many times were they on the foul line up until late in the game?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. I know Iowa shot a ton.
But all honestly, guys, the reason why we're blowing these big leads as far as we have no bench at all. Mm-hmm. And I like Fulkerson, but he's a role player on a real good team. He does not deserve extended minutes.
Yeah, Iowa rotated 10 guys, Philly. Like, it's not a stretch to say they were probably a little fresher late in the game especially with as much kind of energy and juice Tennessee exerted early. But, I mean, I think that is a point worth making. And I thought Barnes tried to save some guys, you know, early on in the first half when he brought in Pons and Fulkerson and even Walker there for a little bit.
Yeah.
So one could argue that we got tired or that maybe bringing those three in kind of disrupted the mojo. But, I mean, really, the first half you still played great. It was the start of the second half, I think, that became an issue.
As far as scoring production for the bench, Iowa had 8 points between two players, and we had Bowden with 8.
Huh. Well, that's surprising, though.
Very.
Well, guys, we just don't have a true five, man. Alexander's really a four-playing five. And Fulkerson will be Grant Williams' backup. That's the way if you had a good roster, that's the way things ought to be. But, I mean, we're in year four, and we still haven't recruited a good center.
It's true, but, I mean, there's a lot of teams in the Sweet 16 that are built not like with the traditional setup, Philly. I think you got to develop more depth during the season. You're blowing teams out during a real crappy stretch of the SEC season, and Rick Barnes has got this coaching philosophy that you can't. Well, first of all, he never empties the bench because he thinks that's disrespectful to the other coach. That's not exactly what I'm talking about. But you're up 30 on teams, and you're not allowing like Derek Walker to play big minutes in those games. Like why not? So he comes into an NCAA tournament game like this one, and he fouls and he turns the ball over. I'm with you. Like, that was a big problem. Derek Walker came in the game and was a negative. Like, you got to at least have guys come in off the bench and not hurt your plus-minus.
Well, one good thing is Lamonte Turner's back to normal now. That's great.
Certainly looks like it.
And really, our guard play outside of turn, I don't understand why we're turning the ball over so much now. I just don't get it.
Yeah, that does not make sense, Philly. I don't know where that bug came from, but they need to ditch that before the Sweet 16 big time.
Yeah, because really, when this run started last year, it was to Purdue, and hope it didn't end with Purdue.
Mm. Interesting.
Isn't that right when we got our first taste of the big time last year?
Yeah, and that Purdue team, much better than this year's Purdue team.
Well, we can't let Edwards go off for 30 or 40 on us.
Now, guard the 7-footer, and then don't let that dude do that, because that would be very bad.
Well, Fulke ought to be able to guard that guy. They're built kind of alike. I mean, that ought probably be a pretty good matchup.
They got into harm's head last year when they played. That's the big 7-footer. They had two 7-footers last year that they rotated in and out.
Haas and Harm, and
Haas, he graduated. And so now Harm's takes – yeah, it's true.
Grant Williams put him on the floor one time, and I think he had a headache.
If they can frustrate him early, like, I mean, he's one of the more emotional players I've seen playing college basketball in a long time. So,
I'll tell you what, though, for somebody that gets in foul trouble, Grant Williams still slams people. It's very refreshing to see it. Another reason, we'll finally get off here, those fouls, both Schofield and Williams, are the reason why they came back, because we had both sitting on the bench, and we learned scoring after that. See you guys.
See you,
Philly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like,
22 second half points. Your score is on the bench.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't know that I'm quite with Willie on how many minutes Fulkerson deserves, but I do think he's given valuable minutes in a lot of games. But when he's out there, especially if, you know, Grant and or Admiral are not, you're not going to score. Like, he's, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's a cleanup guy. He's an occasional backdoor cut for a dunk guy. He's not a, I mean, we've joked about it all year about how what happens when we involve Fulkerson in the offense is not good.
No, the best
he fell down on the top of the key just catching a pass.
The best way Fulkerson impacts regular half court motion offense is if they throw it to him in the post, he catches it, dribbles it once, and then passes it out to somebody else who's open.
Or someone misses a shot and he jumps up and slams it through before.
I'm not counting the garbage. I was just saying that to be a part of the normal offense, that's the only way. Everything else is cleanup, like you're talking about.
I'm saying if we run good offense and miss a shot, that's when he's good too.
Right, yeah, I agree.
Sometimes it's a plan. He's got a couple alley-oops, though. I'll count those.
Yeah.
I'll say alley-oops count in the half court.
You were watching Central Florida and Duke yesterday, right? Did you notice how they came out of a timeout and they ran a specific play and got an alley-oop dunk? Like, I
feel like the one to Taco or the other one?
No.
Okay, the other one. Yeah. I was going to say, alley-oops to Taco don't count.
I feel like...
alley-oop cost them a game.
Yeah, dude.
That was the swing point.
That was it? That was the one?
I don't know how else you really score there, though. They just should have made it. They just missed the play. Anyway.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Then it just cost him the play.
Well,
it was a good idea. He just missed it.
I guess what I'm getting back at is, like, we rarely, as Tennessee, run specific sets out of timeouts to try and get a basket like that. Like, there's been a few over the whole course of 36 games.
We're saving them for Purdue.
I was hoping.
And Virginia or Oregon, maybe.
I've watched this last play a few times. Lamonte, maybe he should have gone a second or two earlier.
He blew off the screen from Grant. I was watching it, too. Yeah, he just decided not to use. Of course, they hedged really early. Yeah.
So, I think Lamonte...
Yeah, it's pointless.
I think Bone should have just looked off and made a pass to Grant at the elbow, and he's going to shoot a free throw,
Grant,
jump shot to win the game.
I don't think Bone knew how much time was left, because he shoots it with, what, four? And Grant's right there for a bounce pass to get it, you know, a quarter of the way down the lane.
Grant
with
might,
nobody in front of
Grant
him.
Grant might
moment.
Have actually been able to go all the way to the basket.
That's
he's either going to draw a foul on this guy, or one dribble. If this guy comes up, he probably still even has time to bounce it to Alexander for a dunk to win. No, Bone catches the ball with 6 seconds left.
No, I'm saying he shoots it with – no, does he shoot it immediately?
Immediately.
Okay.
Yeah, he's elevating at 5.9. Like, yeah, he should have just gone. He's also way over on the side, though.
Yeah.
So he may have not realized how much time was left.
Couldn't see the clock?
Bone could have even driven the basketball and probably created more.
That's what I'm thinking. I just don't think he knew exactly how much time was left.
That's bad. I wish – if Lamonte just passes to him 1 or 2 seconds earlier, you're going to get something at the rim. All righty. Well, we're going to get to more of your phone calls here. 865-546-8200 is the number to join the program. Last call for phone calls. We got a couple on the horn, and we'll get to you guys right after a quick break here. Stick with us. It's 3 and Out. It's brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. This segment of 3 and Out is brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of 3 and Out. You can work out absolutely free and try Gold's Gym before you join. Just download the free 3-day VIP pass at goldsgym.com and find a location nearest you. Davey, you got the Gold's Gym fitness tip of the day?
Today's fitness tip, eat more greens.
Mm.
I know it's not a fan favorite, but it'll... we're talking like kale, spinach, broccoli, collard greens. You can get a really good variety of options, but greens are full of fiber.
Green beans, peas.
And, a lot of the vitamins and minerals that you will have in the greens can really help protect as far as certain diseases and just kind of help keep the immune system up.
Chard, artichoke.
It's not the most flashy fitness tip of the day,
asparagus.
I will admit, but it's one that you need to hear.
Brussels sprouts.
There you go.
Lettuce.
It's your Gold's Gym fitness tip of the day. It's brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of 3 and Out. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Rod up next. What's up, Rod?
Fellas, how are we doing this morning?
Pretty good, Rod. We're still alive. That's all that matters.
Barely. I about near had a heart attack here on Saturday night. Sunday, whatever day it was. I didn't forgot. We just done a thing down at the church where we was having a viewing party, and the old wifey, she made me go, and I got a little excited there at the end and said some words that aren't youth appropriate, and the wifey sent me packing. I had to sleep in the barn last night, so I about near died for real.
Did Rocky and Top keep you warm, Rod?
Yeah, actually, Rock left. Now, Top, he's your mama's boy, so he stays in there with her, but Rocky did come out to the barn with me. I'm just glad to hear that you're back, Nate. I was getting worried you was gone all the end of last week, and it just didn't feel right. Davey did a good job, but it didn't feel right without you there leading into this weekend, and I'd start to pin it on you if we lost.
Well, I
ditto.
Apparently I have to go on vacation now every Thursday through Sunday.
I don't know. Maybe if you're not on vacation, we don't blow a big lead.
Maybe we don't get a big lead. I don't know.
Isn't it funny now that the way I was thinking as I was hearing Ian's talk earlier that a lot of teams experience, I'm sure Davey was in panic mode last night with his Blue Devils, and I think about Auburn there in the first round at New Mexico State or whoever they played for Mexico, and I started thinking that you get these games throughout the tournament and leading to the tournament where you're worried about the way that your team's looking, and, if we play like this, we're gonna blow it. We're not gonna go very far. We're gonna get beat, you know, so on and so forth. And I'm sure Duke's feeling that today, that they're lucky, and Auburn was feeling that after the first game. And I know there's several other examples. Boys, I ain't never seen a team do it all in one game. You know, the first half you think we're Final Four bound, national championship bound. The second half you're thinking, my God, we're gonna get killed by Purdue on Thursday. I mean, I've never seen a team have such polar opposites. But you got to put yourself in check and say, there's a lot of teams that sit after every game and say, you know, what could have been, or man, we're lucky to still be alive, and that's all that matters at this time of year is we're still alive, and we get to go on and keep playing, and we can turn around and do what Auburn did to Kansas after getting beat by New Mexico State, you know?
Yeah, I mean, hell, we put two halves together where you think that's what's going to happen. If they put three quarters of those halves and do it twice, yeah, man, they'll beat Purdue by 20-something.
Well, and I know, Hootie, I know you love the offense and you love the three ball and everything, and Nate and I, we're more locked down defenders. But I tell you, that first half, now that defense, we scored nearly, damn near 50 points, but how many of that was in transition, getting steals, creating some turnovers, and our defense was leading right into that offense, and we looked locked in. There was one three in the corner that Iowa was about to take, and I seen Grant go in there, and he closed out, hands up, chopping them feet, and I thought, by God, boys, this is it. We're playing good defense, and we were showing it, and we got to keep that going. Did you see that, Nate?
Yeah, the defense in the first half was what we've been begging for all year.
It was stupid good.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. It led to offense. It wasn't just that they didn't run good offense in the second half. Is that they weren't playing on the same tempo?
Right. That defense. I don't know how many, you know, transition buckets we had in the second half where our defense is leading to the offense, but I guarantee you it wasn't many. And one last thing is, man, we got to figure out. We did it against Auburn at Sunday at the SEC Championship, and then in the second half there against Iowa. But we get where we turn the ball over. I mean, it's like it becomes contagious. I mean, it's just people can't hold on to it. We're dribbling it off our foot. I've never seen anything like it to a team, a college team, as good and as old and veteran as we are, turn the ball over 10, 11, 12 times in one half. I mean, that was miserable to watch. Just like it was against Auburn.
And what's weird is, what was it, five turnovers when Kentucky came to Knoxville, Rod? Five for the game.
I mean, that's our MO. Take care of the ball, play good defense. We can do that. We'll go a long way. But, man, I've just never seen anything like it on Sunday and then the flurry that we hit yesterday. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was five turnovers. You forced 17 when Kentucky came to Knoxville, and then we had at least 10 in the second half yesterday.
It's unexplainable. And also, I know you talked about this a while back earlier. I'm not sure exactly how I feel about the whole Admiral telling Barnes, leave Kyle in the game. I get the sentimental, oh, that's cute, way to go, playing the team game. But at the same time, I'll be like, dadgummit, son, you're our best player, get in the game. You know, there's a little bit of, is that good or is that bad? I'm not sure. It's kind of a funky little thing they had going on there.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Rod. That's a great question. I mean, imagine if you lose the game. Like what if Iowa starts overtime and scores six straight points or five straight points, and one of those Kyle fouled the guy on an and one? Like, what's people's reaction to that today? My guess is no one tells anybody that. Like, my guess is if you go on to lose that game, and people ask Rick Barnes, why was Admiral on the bench to start overtime? It's, well, he had four fouls, so we wanted to start him on the bench. And then, because my guess is if you got down, Admiral would be going in the game, right, to try and hit some threes and bring you back.
You'd hope so.
So my guess is that story never comes out if you lose. So maybe it doesn't matter. People might criticize Barnes a little bit if you lost for starting Admiral on the bench. But normally, in a tie game with 5 minutes to go, it's debatable whether you put a player in with four fouls or not if it's tied.
Yeah, I want to go back today and watch what lineup Iowa had in at that point, and if Admiral had been susceptible on the defensive end whenever that kind of had been the situation. And to answer the question of, I mean, kind of like, what's the storyline? It all just depends on the outcome. It really does, as far as, and I think, Nate, you're right that you probably don't hear it if you do lose. But, man, like,
that doesn't mean that it didn't happen, though. Like, no, yeah. So how do you feel about, I don't know, Admiral saying that?
If it's, I mean, it's,
well, he probably doesn't
team,
stay on the bench the moment you get down, would be my guess.
You just,
good point.
The chemistry that you have with them, and then they kind of at least know each other's strengths and weaknesses better than anybody else. And if they realize this is what we need to do, I mean, it looks good now since they won. And I mean, I guess it really just does come down to whether you win or lose, and these are the decisions that you make. And I was also thinking during Rod's call, we gotta get the Jekyll and Hyde shirts out from Shop Fan Run. We got to find some design for that.
I don't want that.
No, we don't.
You don't want a Jekyll and Hyde shirt?
No, I just want to be Jekyll, I think, or Hyde. I don't know which one. Like, do we want to be big and scary, or do we want to be, like, I don't know which is, like,
our, like, which is the good version?
Yeah.
I think Dr. Jekyll is good and
No, yeah,
normally,
but what
he's saying is Hyde, which one, like, a good Tennessee. Like,
yeah.
Ah.
Like, do we?
Do you want the monster?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Maybe,
like,
we're
which
too
is
smart
which?
And too reserved.
Is the
Dr.
monster
Jekyll
the first half, or is the monster the second half?
I think we want to be Hyde.
We want to be the monster. So monster
intense,
Tennessee
edge,
is, yeah.
We're
okay.
This beast.
Yeah, reserved,
right.
Jekyll, smart.
Dr. Jekyll is when we get too much in our own headspace and we go in these lulls and we start making mistakes.
Fair enough. I buy that.
One more break. We'll come back. Final segment. We'll look ahead a little bit. Tennessee takes on Purdue Thursday at 7:29. We'll talk about the Boilermakers. And
let's just call it 7:30.
Okay, 7:30 on Thursday. And then Virginia, Oregon's on the other half of the bracket. So stick with us. Final segment coming right back at you here on 3 and Out. Final segment of 3 and Out. I want to remind you that our live game broadcasts of March Madness are brought to you by the McKinney team with Keller Williams. And man, oh man, did they host us big time out at Elkmont Exchange over the weekend. And we'll be there again on Thursday night, 7:30, for Tennessee's tip-off against Purdue in the Sweet 16. Man, feels good. It's brought to you by the McKinney team with Keller Williams. And if you are buying or selling this spring, get in touch with them at 865-548-8267. It's Travis and Emily McKinney. And if you're out at the watch parties this weekend, you know, Travis went above and beyond to, we said, free food and beer giveaways. Man, he was hooking up everybody with the as part of the Fan Run audience out at Elkmont Exchange. So make your plans to attend Thursday, 7:30, as we watch Tennessee take on Purdue. And as always, visit ZillowKnoxville.com for all the information about the McKinney team with Keller Williams. That's ZillowKnoxville.com. Or just give them a call, 865-548-8267. They've got you covered. It's Knoxville's premier home search, hosted by Knoxville's top agents at ZillowKnoxville.com. So how are we feeling now that we've seen Jekyll and, well, Hyde and then Jekyll against Iowa, and now you face a just slightly better version of that team from the same conference, similar color palette. I mean, I feel like it's just a – we talked about how this was a good draw for Tennessee to start.
It feels like Colgate, Iowa, and Purdue are the same team as they, like, get a little bit better in the game. So we shouldn't be surprised by much. On Thursday.
It's good that the prep's not really crazy. It's not like you're going from like 2-3 Syracuse to some tiny 3-point shooting team, and then to Auburn, and then to like
Virginia. Yeah, it's it's a nice stair step if you bring the intensity each time. But obviously, you know, Purdue very capable, just as Iowa was. In fact, Purdue on the this is crazy BPI matchup predictor 50.7. percent favorite over Tennessee.
Oh wow.
It's a coin flip game. I think the spread is like a 0.5 each way depending on which metric you use. So it's a coin flip game.
Great. Just love sweating these out. I will say though, I mean it's like as far as getting your heart rate up.
Well, what
that'll be the Gold's tip on Thursday. Just watch the game, get your heart rate up.
I saw Purdue one of their media members, as soon as they won, as soon as they beat Villanova, said, hey, this Louisville regional is perfect for Purdue. It's an easy trip for people in Indiana to just come down to Louisville. I was a little annoyed. I was like, man, that kind of stinks that the Purdue fans know they're going to be there a day before Tennessee fans know. I was a little worried about tickets and all that stuff, but surely there'll be a ton of orange in Louisville, I would think. But your four teams there are Virginia, Oregon, and Purdue, Tennessee. And Tennessee gets gets to play Purdue first at 7:30. The Virginia Oregon game follows around 10:00. How do you guys feel about kind of the four team pod and Tennessee's chances to, you know, come out of it for their first ever Final Four?
As far as coming out, I feel really good about that. I will say, as far as like of all the matchups you could want to watch though, as a fan, if you were to travel, I think that Oregon Virginia game is probably the least likely one you would want.
But you've got to like those two teams. I mean,
I don't think Oregon's going to have much of a fan base there.
No.
And Virginia, there were a lot of Virginia fans in attendance last night in Columbia. I thought they did a decent job of traveling. But Virginia's just as boring to watch in person as they are on TV.
Well, that's as I kind of look at the matchups, I mean, you can kind of get lucky, I guess, in the first couple rounds of the NCAA tournament. Like, you know, Oregon able to beat Wisconsin, then they get UC Irvine. I mean, that's pretty nice. We saw Konzo get pretty lucky, his Sweet 16 run. But at this point, especially in a tournament like it is this year, like you're going to have to beat the big boys to advance to the Final Four. I mean, I guess in theory, Tennessee could play Purdue and then Oregon, which would be a fairly easy route to have played a 15, a 10, then just 1-3 and a 12. But by the time you get to the regional final, if you're playing a double-digit seed, that's a team that's obviously on fire. They've obviously played really well. So I saw some people kind of even debating, like, might rather play Virginia than Oregon. Any credence to that? What you guys see Oregon play at all? Like, I didn't.
Well, they're
watch.
Good and they're really hot right now. Like, they are rolling.
Dana Altman's a good coach,
but. I don't know. I mean, are you more likely to catch Oregon or Virginia on a bad night? Probably Oregon.
Yeah.
But Virginia's style isn't so deadly to where, I don't know. I'm worried about Purdue.
All right.
Let me worry about Purdue.
Let's worry about Purdue.
Yeah.
I do like the Thursday. That means we get to come in and talk about it. Hopefully talk about a win on Friday and then set up another game on Saturday.
True. And I like that we got the 7:30 game instead of the late batch.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been actually pretty brutal. 7:30 is nice.
Because it's not set. Like, there's some of the one seeds have to play late, and then some of the other one seeds get to play early. So, like, Gonzaga, Florida State, they're actually the early game on Thursday. Whereas, like, on, I believe it's on Friday, yeah, Duke has to play late. Because, you know, they want people staying up, eyeballs.
I just really didn't want that 9:59 tip that Virginia got.
Ugh.
I get why they did it. Because they want all the West Coast viewership they can get, and by putting that game at 10, you're getting the West Coast for Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems like a tough thing for Virginia. That's a late start. Not a fan. Not at all.
I'm pretty fired up about this North Carolina-Auburn game. Like, I can't wait to see how that one goes. But I got to admit,
yeah, like this
probably be the night Auburn's off. And
yeah, I was
going to
say, do we get bad Auburn?
You might. A lot of times that happens with Cinderella in these games too, where for the first weekend they play two great games, 2 days apart. You know, they're still hot, and then they start the next round and they're just not at all, and they get pounded. Auburn's not necessarily what I mean by that when I say Cinderella. I was thinking more like a double digit seed, but they definitely still profile as a team that can be really hot or not. I mean, but they, really Auburn looked terrible against New Mexico State late in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then came out just like world beaters against Kansas. So I think in that regard, Auburn's a little bit like Tennessee. Just don't know what you're going to get. But, man, they're on fire against Kansas. It was incredible.
Purdue has two double-digit scores.
Yeah?
Two.
What's
Carson? Is it the seven-footer and the really good guard?
It's not the seven-footer. It's their two main guards.
Okay.
Ryan Klein and Carson Edwards. Carson Edwards is, however, at 23.6.
Yeah, he's really, really good.
It'd be cool if we could neutralize the 23.6.
Mm.
Also, how are you 7 foot and only average 5.4 rebounds a game?
He's a head case, man.
They have a guard that averages 5.6.
Not what you want.
You're 7 feet tall.
I mean, we've wanted Purdue all year. Like, we every time the bracketology would come out and yeah, Tennessee was a two, it was like, give us Purdue.
I really hope I don't have to eat those words.
Even if Tennessee loses, I don't think that's a bad thing. That's not like, I mean, that you can't really, like, I wouldn't want to be playing an LSU clone. You know, I mean, they're a three seed in another bracket.
Well,
obviously,
they have two seniors.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the other three seeds, I wouldn't want Texas Tech right now, and I wouldn't want to
play
Houston.
Not after last night. They beat the hell out of Buffalo.
Wouldn't want to play Houston. They creamed Ohio State.
Tennessee to Louisville. To Knoxville, obviously. 248 miles.
I'm glad Tennessee avoided Wofford.
1 second. From West Lafayette, it's 178 miles, so a pretty short trip for Purdue. Virginia, yeah. 492. Oregon, 2,358 miles.
Yeah, not going to be a lot of ducks there. It's been a good draw for Tennessee.
Probably a shorter flight than it is a drive for Tennessee fans, really, when you think about it.
Yeah,
a little more pricey, though.
Yeah.
Just a touch. Just saying. Good stuff by Travis Cabbage there, giving us the geographical breakdown.
Has Tennessee had a better shot to go to the Final Four than this?
I mean, last year,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
If you beat Loyola Chicago, and then they played.
I forgot about last year.
Kansas State at some point.
Kansas State was to get there. I can't remember who they played in the next round. It was a joke. Yeah, that was probably our best shot. But with a healthy team, no, this is probably it. This is pretty good. I'm surprised. I thought Tennessee would be favored over Purdue. And I think on the final line they might be by one. But I did not – I actually thought Tennessee was, you know, significantly better than Purdue. But maybe this is just the a little bit of that Big Ten bump that we've been talking about all year.
I think the that second half will probably hurt the Vols as far as the line goes. Just recency bias.
Not yet. I mean, like I said, they're favored by one, and everything kind of has it as a 0.5 swing one way or the other. I don't know that they can – I guess they could do a favored by a 0.5 if they wanted to. But we'll see. It's weird because everything I listened to and watched over the weekend, everyone's like, yeah, I have Tennessee in my Final Four. And each game they've shown why they should be there. And in each game they've played a half where it's like, wait a minute, what? Uh-oh. I think people are still – like they still believe in Tennessee – and they're still kind of, I think even Tennessee fans probably feel that way. I know I do.
Yeah, yeah. You believe in Tennessee, but you can't trust them. You can't know without a doubt that you're going to get Hyde for an entire 40 minutes. What?
Four SEC teams in the Elite Eight.
Yep. Sweet 16.
That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Not bad. Playing for the Elite Eight is what I was going to say. That's pretty impressive.
It's good for the conference. You get like $250,000 per game.
How many Big Ten teams are left? One, two,
three, four.
And they're like four ACC, four Big Ten, and four ACC. Something like that.
One, two, three.
Maybe one of those only
Isn't
has
it
three.
Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, and who?
Five. There's five ACC teams left.
I said Big Ten.
He was jumping to me. Michigan
State. Trying to see if the Big Ten was better.
Michigan, Purdue.
Is that it?
I think that's it.
Ha.
Yeah, three.
Take that, Big Ten.
Yeah. You got Houston and Gonzaga. All right. Talk Sports is next. We'll get into some of the other games from the weekend
Optimism
tomorrow.
Optimism Tuesday tomorrow. Don't forget.
And we'll be really optimistic as we get set for the Thursday tip. Tennessee, Purdue, make your plans. Elkmont Exchange, brought to you by the McKinney team with Keller Williams as well. Talk Sports is next.